Good evening, everybody, and thank you again for hanging out with us here on Lakeshore Public Radio and supporting us at 89.1 FM and online streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Time for Midwest Beats, a program all about music, the arts, and the people who make it. I'm your host, Tom Lounges, and today we're going to California. We're not going to be, panning for gold or anything. We're going to get some great Americana music. You see, California-based husband and wife duo Andrew Stern and Laura Arias are three pairs of boots. I'm going to find out who has that third pair. We'll find out in a little bit. They are a great new band. They're on their second album right now, and we're going to feature some songs from that album. The album's called Long Rider, and they are, finding their own and coming to their own voice and getting on the radar in a big way. So let's help them do that, and let's get things started before we call them and debut the music. As I mentioned, let the music do the talking. This is the opening track, and right now, one of my top three songs from this album. It's quitting time somewhere, right? Yeah, I think it is. I think I'm gonna go. It's quitting time.
Don't love me anymore. I miss our being close the way we were before. When I look into your eyes, I can't sense your desire. His love is fragile as crystal. Or steely toe. Can it weather stormy time? Should I bother making plans when life can cut them all down? Is it already quitting time? Have I been reading your mind? I want to know. Did I spend my years wasting time while you used me with your pretty lies? Am I imagining your long lost tears, searching for your hand, but it's not there? I miss our evening strolls, we're not kissing anymore. Does that mean you'll be leaving?
Ooh.
I think we're a little early on that song. It's not quitting time, it's starting time. This is Midwest Beats. You are listening to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounges. This is Midwest Beat, a show about music and the people who make it. And tonight, we're going to talk with the folks you just heard, Andrew Stern and Laura Arias. I believe I said that right. We're going to find out in a minute. They are three pairs of boots, and they are on the phone with us. Are you there?
We are here.
All right. Laura, is it Arias?
Yeah, you said it perfectly.
Excellent. Okay. I wanted to make sure, and I should have asked off air, but I put my foot in my mouth sometimes doing that. Anyway, this is your second album, correct?
Yes, it is.
Newly released. Is it officially out yet, or is it coming out?
It is officially released. It was released on January 29th.
Okay.
We've been sitting on it for about a year. It was supposed to be released last summer for the obvious reason.
Right.
It got held back.
Wow. Now, I've got to say Andrew, you know, this is the time of year you were busiest before. You were a tax accountant. Do you miss it at all?
I can't even see it in my rearview mirror.
I kind of figured, you know, this time of year, I know the friends of mine that are accountants are kind of pulling their hair out and just wishing it was over. And you guys get
I did it for a fair amount of time and had my own business. Had a lot of interesting clients, being in the Bay Area, a lot of people in the arts. But ultimately, you know, it still got down to, you know, deadlines and responsibilities and pressure and that kind of thing.
You know, one of the jobs that I think I admire most and have to scratch my head over why someone would choose it is accounting, because my gosh, the numbers, there's just so many and they just come at you from all sides. Just craziness.
I mean, you're right there. It sort of chose me. I didn't choose that as a profession. I was headed to law school and a friend of mine's father had an accounting firm and said, hey, you know, why don't you, you know, come over here and work for a little bit. So I took a left turn figuring I go back to school, but it also let me, you know, continue to play music, give me a lot of time for that because of the way that the seasons run in the tax world.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sucked me in. It turned out I was good at it.
Oh, very good.
It sucked me in. So,
well, you're clearly good at making music too and production. You produced this album, correct?
We produced the album here in our home studio.
Wow. Is this a do-it-yourself? And I'm asking because I'm not familiar with the record label, Dark Country Music.
It is a do-it-yourself. We are, it's our own label. We are self-produced, self-financed. We have total control over our lovely catalog at this point.
Excellent. So this album now is out. How are you distributing it? Being an indie, how are you getting it into stores, or how are you selling it, and how are you going to promote it now that COVID is hopefully fading away into the background a little bit?
We fortunately have some very good people working with us. We're working with Aaron Anderson, who's a manager and runs Olivia Management out of Nashville. And we've been promoting the record for a few months. Had a publicist working on it, a digital marketing company called Venture Music. We just started doing some radio PR with Bill Wentz and some video PR starting for the video that is tied to the song you just played. We shot the video in Nashville about a year ago. So we got all these different promotional things going on. We've been doing a lot of live stream stuff, interviews, Zoom, Instagram, all that sort of thing, and have had a quick learning curve in knowing how to do all of that and make it sound good. I mean, it's one thing to do it, you know, you hold your phone up, you use the camera, you know, use a little speaker in the phone, and the microphone. But we really wanted to quickly get to having our live stream sound like you were at our concert. We just did our first live stream that we hosted ourselves 2 weeks ago on Facebook. we spent about a month getting ready for it. Hired a good friend of ours who's a veteran tour on stage studio mix guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a lot of sorting out and figuring out how to get the live stream sound to sound like you're in a good club. But he's, our friend Eddie is very good at this, and the live stream we just did turned out great. We, you know, if I look back to the first live stream we did last year and compare it to now, I mean, it's just, you know, I think there were dinosaurs roaming around all at our first live stream.
Cringeworthy, huh? Cringeworthy.
Very much so.
This album has 10 songs, and I know that you primarily are the writer, Andrew. Laura is your muse, okay? I read the quote where you said, when you write, you think of her voice, you think of her. How did this chemistry develop? I know you guys were kind of a whirlwind romance. You met and got married, and now you're cranking albums out. And how did this all come about? I mean, and why is this the right partner for each of you?
You want me to go first? Okay, I'll start. It has been an interesting journey for the two of us. We've done a number of different types of projects over the years. When we first met, we were in a songwriting project together, and it turned into a rock band. We were on an indie label. We did a little touring, and then it eventually morphed into doing a more of a pop thing. We tiptoed into dance and then sort of ended up back in Americana, which is kind of like sort of our roots, and put together a song. And it just turned out, we just did one song for a placement opportunity, and it was just like, man, this is what we should be doing. Like, this is our wheelhouse. And it turns out for me, it's sort of right back to where I started. I mean, when I first started playing guitar, besides listening to all the great English guitar players of the 60s, I was, you know, big into the Buffalo Springfield and Nick Drake and Crosby, Stills and Nash and Poco and all those.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we're right back in the mishmash of country, folk, rock, just all sort of mixed up together. As for, you know, writing for Laura, I mean, at one point she was writing more, and then I sort of took over once I stopped or was just heading out of that other gig I had. And I don't know, I just sort of, I think all those years of writing in my other business and this sort of constant editing really helped me in writing songs and lyrics in this genre. You know, it's so much about the story. You don't want to be too literal. You have to imply and let people's imaginations run. And at the same time, I feel like I'm a screenwriter or writing, for movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm writing for somebody else's voice. I'm writing for, you know, a very powerful woman who has a very great point of view and really knows what she wants to sing about. And I have to try to match that. You know, there are songs that get turned down.
Mm-hmm.
Right, honey?
It's interesting you said you feel like you're writing kind of for movies, because when I listen to these songs, they're almost like little vignettes. They're short stories put to music, and they complement each other as you go through the set list.
Thank you so much.
That's really kind of the idea. I really want to bring a lot of imagery to the songs, and I really try to frame them so that it really fits Laura's voice.
Mm-hmm.
and her point of view. I mean, we're obviously been married for a while and have a lot of similarities in how we think about a number of things. So it's an interesting challenge. I really like it.
What started you, we'll get to Laura in a minute, but what started you, Andrew, in music? When did the music bug bite? What was the catalyst for you to say, I'm going to pick up a guitar and try my hand at making a living with music?
I was a typical young teenager, growing my hair long. My parents hated that. And, you know, just sort of got bit by, you know, hearing music on the radio and went and bought an electric guitar and an amp. I think that's when my grades started to go south.
As it usually does.
Yeah. And just got captivated. And even though I grew up in the Bay Area, I wasn't really a fan very much of the San Francisco sound.
Mm-hmm.
I became really enamored with the British bands of the 60s, which really, who were, you know, those bands were just echoing American black music.
Right.
You know, the 40s and 50s, Howlin' Wolf and Lightning Hopkins and all that. And they just channeled it and, you know, did a great job at making the world aware of it. But I was initially drawn in by guys like Peter Green and Eric Clapton and Hendrix and Jeff Beck. So those are the guys I really started learning how to play. But it quickly went over into the blues. I mean, I was a big fan of Mike Bloomfield and Albert King. And then equally, you know, into a lot of the L.A. bands, The Doors, Love, Buffalo Springfield, like so. And growing up in San Francisco was such a, you know, a hodgepodge of influences, again, sort of all mixed together. I mean, there are shows here where they put, you know, Miles Davis and the Grateful Dead on the same bill.
Right.
Which, you know, you just don't see that anymore. Music's so compartmentalized now. But growing up in San Francisco was a great place to get started as a musician. And then, you know, it just felt so good. I never stopped playing.
Did you always play the resonator? Or I mean, you mentioned electric guitar to start, but when did you go to resonator? And that's a prominent sound on this album.
It is. I love playing the resonator. I probably picked one up about 4 or 5 years ago. I bought a cheap one because I wasn't sure, am I going to use this or not? And I did start to use it a fair amount. And then Laura and I were at a really good music store here in the Bay Area called Griffin Music. Mainly, they sell acoustic guitars. They have a lot of really cool high-end stuff, as well as, you know, regular price as well. But, you know, a lot of Taylors and Martins and guitars like that. And they had a bunch of resonators. They had a lot of cool stuff there. So we were there. I was actually picking up a nylon string guitar because I wanted to have the Willie Nelson sound in my arsenal in the studio. And I picked up this rather expensive resonator. And Laura, I recall, she was way across the store. And she heard me playing it. She came right over. She said, you have to buy that guitar. I was like, are you kidding me? Look at the price tag. Because I don't care. You have to buy that guitar. It just sounds so good. And I did, and I ended up using it. And I still use it all the time.
Wow. I love the sound of those guitars. I really do. And I don't think enough people use them. Maybe that's why this album stands out so much to me, because it's got that groove.
It has such a nice sound to it. It's so unique.
Now, you play all the instruments on this except the drums, so you are a multi-instrumentalist. The guitar, obviously, is your instrument of choice, I would think. Is that where you started?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay. Laura, do you play?
Not on our albums. No, I don't. But I wouldn't dare. But, no, I mean, I play guitar to write songs that you know, we record. But that's about it.
Okay. So what is it about Andrew that makes him the perfect writer for you and the perfect partner on stage and off?
Uh-oh.
Well, I mean, he's very talented. He's really turned himself into a wonderful writer, and he's obviously very talented as far as instruments go. But I really admire his taste level. You know, I think he makes great choices, and I think he's got great instincts, and he's sensitive, which is important. So I think that all makes him great, and I have a lot of trust, which is important, because I feel like I can really mine within myself, go within myself, and bring things out that I don't know that I'd be able to do with anybody else. But with Andrew, of course, the trust is there, so I can.
Hmm. All right, let's play another song for the listeners so they get a feel for what you guys do. We started with the opening track, Quittin' Time, and my favorite on here right now, and of course that changes every day when I listen to a CD another time or an album, I find another song that I missed somehow along the way. My favorites on this right now, if I had to name three, which I try to pick my top three, is Quittin' Time, Summer of Love, and Roller Coaster. But what is a song that you want the listeners to hear? I picked mine already. The first one was mine. This time it's yours. What's your choice?
What do you think?
I think actually I think Summer of Love is one that is a really good representation of one side of us.
Okay.
And I think that either Take a Step or Devil Road.
Devil Road's
like
a good one.
The faster two-step kind of thing that we get into sometimes. But you picked three of our favorites already. So
excellent.
I would say besides the three you picked, I would add Take a Step and Devil Road and Everywhere I Go.
Angels of the Trail?
Oh, no, and Angels of the Trail.
In other words, you like them all. All right, well, you know what? Since we're debating this, Andrew, let's let Laura pick. Laura, what do you want to play? Lady's choice.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, then let's play Angels of the Trail because, and we can dedicate it to our friend Ren.
All right.
What do you think?
Well, you just did. So let's play it. This is Three Pairs of Boots. We'll be back with Andrew and Laura right after this. Check it out.
Is it good fortune? Is it just happenstance? Seems to be just a little too often to be coincidence. Whenever I reach a dead end and didn't know where to turn, out of the blue, when least expected, good advice from which to learn. My last
Angels of the Trail. And we are on the trail with three pairs of boots walking your way after that song. We've got Andrew Stern and Laura Arias. And I've got to ask you, we've been scratching our heads trying to figure who's the leftover pair of boots belong to. We got a couple of theories. We're thinking, Jose, my engineer, said, well, maybe it was their boots and then they had a baby and that was the third pair. And I'm thinking it might be because your three different styles of music blended together, folk, country, and rock. Mm-hmm. Are either of those accurate?
No, but I love that one.
Okay.
Actually,
we're going to borrow that, I think.
Yeah, we're going to borrow that. We'll send you some royalties.
All right, sounds good. So where'd the name come from? Who is the third pair of boots?
Well, it seems to be a shifting cast of characters, but originally, when we first started, a good friend of ours who we've done a number of different projects with, came on and just helped us get started writing songs. Like, came in and we wrote songs together. We had, like, you know, we'd get together and just, like, let's write a song. You know, we'd get together twice a week and just started writing. And he fell off very quickly. He has other things going on. But we just kind of wanted to honor him in that he was the one who really helped us.
Our angel of the trail.
Yeah, he was, exactly.
And
it wasn't the first time, actually. So I was just sort of searching around for names and trying to think of a name that had, you know, a reference to that there were three people involved. And that one just came up. And now, you know, he's gone, although he ran the lights for us and set up our whole lighting system in our live stream studio. But other people, like, we have some really good friends who work for us at times. I mean, both of the guys who mixed the record for us are longtime friends of ours. So we're very fortunate we have some really good people helping us.
A revolving third pitch. Kind of like the fifth Beatle. Was it George Martin? Was it Billy Preston? Who was it? There's always a fifth Beatle somewhere. So now we have a third pair of boots here. All right. Laura, I'm not going to let you get away with what I asked you earlier. I want to find out about you. We know that that Andrew started playing guitar early on, kind of ticked off his parents a little bit, and as his grades fell. But let's talk about you. When did music bite you? When did you decide, this is what I want to do?
Well, I think music bit me as far back as I can remember. And I was a creative kid. I sang, I danced, and at 15, I bought a used guitar, a Stratocaster, and I started teaching myself how to write songs after one of my best friends taught me three chords on that guitar, and I ran with it. And then that's just what I wanted to do. I wanted to sing. I wanted to write. And I think that's why Andy and I do so well together, because we have similar needs to create.
Okay, so how long have you been doing this together and separately?
Well, I was 15, so I got my first band together when I was 17. My first singing job when I was 17. What about you?
I was in my first band, you know, literally within weeks after starting to play. And I never stopped since then. And then we hooked up, you know, years later, very quickly. I mean, the story is I placed a want ad for a singer, and Laura answered. She was one of the 50 people who answered, and one of the two I actually invited over to my studio. And she sang one song, one time, 3 minutes, and I said, great, you're hired. She was just, you know, it was so obvious how good she was. She has it. Whatever it is, she's got it.
Now, you mentioned that you dabbled with different styles and genres. You've got two albums out as three pair of boots. Did you release anything under other band names or artist names?
We many, many years ago, we were in a rock band called Candy Planet. And then we did some pop stuff under Laura's name, which was her stage name called Laura LaRue.
Okay.
And so there's that stuff is floating around out there somewhere.
Yeah, but we never really had the time to devote ourselves to the writing and the producing until very recently, just because life, careers, having a child, raising a child. So it wasn't really until you were able to retire that we've really been putting our all into.
Yeah, the last few years were tough because we were, you know, getting three pairs of boots off the ground. It probably started like 4+ years ago, something like that.
Okay.
And I knew that I was going to stop doing the other job at some point soon. So I spent a lot of time. It was a difficult couple of years of juggling both those professions full time. But I knew that I wanted it all set up. I wanted it rolling once I stopped crunching numbers for other people. So it transitioned pretty smoothly. But I agree with Laura. I mean, we never quite had enough time when we were doing these other projects to really fully devote ourselves. And now we have the time. And, of course, technology has really leveled the playing field for so many musicians.
Right.
So made it easier.
Now that I'm assuming your child is getting older and giving you a little more free time as well, will we have a third member of the band? Will that child fill the third pair of boots at some point? Is it in the DNA? Are we seeing some talent emerge?
Oh, yeah. He's 17 now, and we didn't think that he was going to play an instrument because we threw the drums and the piano and voice lessons. And he was good at all of them when he was younger, but never practiced. He just wasn't interested. So mm-hmm. like, okay, fine. He's going to be artistic some other way. But then a couple of years ago, he came to me and said, hey, Dad, you know, show me this song. Show me how to play this song on guitar. So I loaned him, you know, a cheap electric that I had, and he started playing, and he started practicing all the time to the point of where, okay, now we're going to get you a better guitar. And then And so when he started playing, before he started playing music, he was a big into rap. And then okay. he started playing music, and all of a sudden it was grunge and punk. It was Black Flag. It was Nirvana. And then within the last 4 or 5 months, all of a sudden it's like Johnny Cash and Buck Owens and Elliott Smith.
Hmm.
And Howling Wolf.
Yeah, Howling Wolf. He bought me a Lead Belly record for Christmas. So he's really expanding, and he's gotten to be quite a good guitar player in the relatively short time. So, I mean, the fantasy of, you know, in a few years when he's in his college years for him to, and we're able to go out and play live, like in clubs and do some touring, to have him join and not as the roadie, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be pretty cool.
So he's working in the home studio there on his own music as well, I'm assuming.
He's not quite writing his own stuff. He's just
okay.
practicing a lot.
All right.
And playing to songs that he really likes. Trying a lot of different styles.
He became obsessed with the B-Bender.
Oh, yeah. Do you know about the B-Bender?
No.
Oh, I didn't either. But about 2 months ago, he came up and said, hey, Dad, you know, have you checked out the B-Bender? I'm like, what are you talking about? It turns out it was a guitar that was invented by, I think it was by the brother of Clarence Smith. I don't know if I'm getting the names right. But the guy who joined the Byrds and was on the Sweethearts of the Rodeo record.
Clarence White?
Yes.
Okay.
Clarence White. I think it was his brother who invented this machinery that you stick on a Telecaster. And what it does is that it bends the B string so you can make the guitar sound like a pedal steel.
Wow.
And the way it actually works is that the guitar strap that's near the neck is actually in this sort of metal piece of metal groove. And as you push down on the guitar neck, it bends the string.
Wow. I'm going to have to look into that. That sounds pretty cool. I've never heard anyone mention that before.
It makes the most beautiful sound.
Yes, it's very pedal steel like. If you go on YouTube, one of the videos I've seen that is really good. Brad Paisley, of course, great guitar player, plays one. I think he actually has a G bender, but you can still figure it out what the guitar is all about. So he's totally into the B bender. I had never heard of it.
I hadn't either. It's something to look into, I'll tell you.
Clarence White was really good at playing it, obviously.
We've had Roger McGuinn, and we've had Chris Hillman on. In fact, Chris is probably going to be coming back on again soon. He's got a new book out that's very interesting. We're going to try and get him on from the birds and the
cool.
day. You got 10 tracks on here. Were these written entirely for this project, or were these some that were left over from the first album? How did this all come together? Because, like I said, they work together well. They flow well. The stories lend themselves to each other.
These were all written for this record. We, that's sort of true, but the music was written for this record. There's one song on the new record that, the song called Low, that I had written and really liked the music. Couldn't get the lyrics right. I liked the subject matter. I just couldn't get them to work. And I finally just got so frustrated, and I'd spent a lot of time working on the song. That's what Fresh just said. I told Laura, okay, this song's just, it's not going to be on the album, not working. And right around the same time, she pitched me on this song that she had written years back called Low. And I went back and listened to it. And musically, it wasn't quite right for this project, but the lyrics were really good. And somehow, like the day, I think it was the day after I threw the song away, I got up really early. I remember Sunday morning. And I came in the studio like 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was feeling just despondent that song wasn't working. Anyway, I thought maybe I should take the lyrics from Low that Laura wrote and put them to the song that I just threw away, and voila, it like fit perfectly. I woke her up out of a dead sleep, dragged her into the studio, and quickly convinced her that it worked, and she agreed.
Wow.
But other than that, I tend to write a lot of songs. So the first album, there's 12 songs on there. We probably wrote 20 plus. For the Long Rider record, probably wrote close to 20 songs. We finished the album with 12 songs, mixed, mastered everything, and at that point decided that two of them weren't quite as good as the other 10. So we got rid of the last two, and the 10 made it. The album was very early on. There's a theme that kind of got established because a friend of ours, who's a filmmaker, was doing a documentary about this woman who's a lady long writer. And that's actually the title of the documentary.
Okay.
And she asked us to write a few songs for the documentary, and one actually is in there, Angels of the Trail. And she started sharing stories about this woman, Bernice Ende, who was the long writer. And the themes were, not only about her personal experience being out on the road like that, but it just spoke to a much bigger sense of issues and how to think about life. It really was kind of, there were some universal themes there. I mean, Laura and I both feel that we're long writers. We have a very, circuitous, meandering route through our musical careers. You just never know where it's going to lead you or who you're going to meet. And this woman, Bernice, who the documentary is on, she is a lady long rider. A long rider is a person who goes out and doesn't ride her horse all day.
Mm-hmm.
She goes out for like 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, East Coast, West Coast, Mexico to Canada, sleeping out every night, campfire, just amazing stories, extremely uplifting, and also tremendous hardships. It's not all glamour when you're out there. Rain and sleet and cold and,
right,
broke and in the middle of nowhere and not knowing anybody. Just great, inspiring stories. And that kind of led to the theme and the stories on this record. Some of the songs, there's a few songs that are directly inspired by her journeys, and then it just seeps into the rest of the record.
Okay, I just pulled it up here, and it looks pretty fascinating. Ren Winfield did the film. That's your friend. Did you do a variety of songs for this soundtrack?
The songs that are we did one. We did a few based upon Bernice's experiences, and Ren chose one to put into the documentary, which was Angels of the Trail.
Okay.
Everywhere I Go is another song that was kind of based around Bernice. And then the song I Am the Map is reflecting upon Bernice's experiences as well. That one, actually, Ren wrote the lyrics, I wrote the music too. So Laura and I collabed on Low, and Ren and I collabed on I'm the Map, and then the rest were either written by me or there were a couple written by Laura. So that's how that all sort of came about. Ren is a very good friend of ours, who up until recently lived in Santa Fe for years. She's a devoted lover of horses. She, you know, in Santa Fe, she had a horse and two mules. I think she's got a couple horses now where she lives up in Washington. So she became fascinated with, you know, the story of Bernice, and that led her to, you know, make the film.
Wow. Well, let's do the song that that she wrote with you, I Am the Map. This was the one that made me scratch my head when I was listening to it, not knowing the story behind it. I thought, what is this song about? And now I know. So let's, now that we all know it, let's play it. And we'll be back again to talk with Andrew and Laura. And we'll take it into the kitchen after this.
Mine is the breath that coaxes flame from the ember. Drumbeat in your chest. You say you wrote to forget, but you write to thank you.
I am the map. I'm not the road. Just the direction pointing you to discover your own journey, I guess. What an interesting song. Now it makes a little more sense. It's a woman that is traveling across country 2,000 miles on horseback. My wife's into horses, so I think she'll appreciate that that song more now. This is an interesting story. I was, again, during that song, I was looking this over. Alone Across America on Horseback. It's a book, first of all. And then she made it into a documentary, correct?
Yeah, Bernice wrote the book, and then Ren picked up on her story and approached her about making a documentary. I think Ren first met her years before, and then, you know, as they got to know each other, like 8 years later, Bernice agreed to let her do a documentary.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Wow. I, when I start looking at how much she's done, 30,000 mile journey on horses over 15 years. And
yeah.
Just pretty wild. You don't think of that in today's world, you know, the horse thing. Let's talk about, before we go into the kitchen, I want to find out a little bit more about, Laura, your influences. I hear, when I listen, especially to a song like that, I hear a little Emmylou Harris in there, but I'm trying to pinpoint. You have a familiar but not familiar voice, and I'm trying to find out where it came from. We all emulate someone when we first start out in the business till we find our own way, find our own map, so to speak. Who was it that you looked to for influences and inspiration when you were starting, and how did it progress?
Well, I can remember the first pop song I ever heard when I was very young, maybe two or three, and I heard that Do You Know the Way to San Jose, sung by Dionne Warwick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so from that point on, anything that was melodic just grabbed me. So growing up, you know, Elton John, ABBA, oh gosh, but then of course, Simon and Garfunkel, the Beatles, like, oh yeah, Kate Bush. But then, you know, just the raw poetry of someone like Patti Smith. So, I mean, oh gosh, I think I had
Chrissy Hynde.
I mean, pretty much any woman, woman singer I was loving, but, I was really attracted to melody, and so anybody who could milk a melody,
okay,
I was all over that.
All right, let's talk about, we got a few minutes left, let's talk about Cooking in Country. It's a new YouTube show that you guys are doing out of your kitchen with music.
Yeah.
How'd that come about?
Well, it's our version of guerrilla marketing.
Okay.
On the second record, our management person, Aaron, has her artists do guerrilla marketing, which is sort of just sort of a cheap way of getting, you know, your name out there and doing fun things.
Mm-hmm.
We did something fun for the first record, and this one was like, well, let's see about, you know, combining, you know, my love for cooking with a little music. Of course, we had never filmed a thing. Total rank amateurs, just like, well, oh, let's buy a camera and some lights and we'll just do it. After each episode, we've done five so far. After each episode, we would kind of look at each other like, okay, we just did 20 things wrong. Let's make sure we correct those for the next time. And then the next time it's like, great, we got those right. Now there's 20 more things we did wrong. You know, that sort of thing. Learned a lot. But they were really a lot of fun. And now we're, our friend Happy Sanchez, who was the original third pair of boots, is coming back on to produce the next five. We were just setting up lights yesterday in the kitchen again. We're going to shoot five more. And Laura is stepping out from behind the camera. She was the producer, camera person, editor on the first five.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's going to be the co-host. So I think I'm in for some trouble.
Uh-oh. So are you going to be coming up with your own recipes there, Laura?
I may get a couple of desserts in there. We'll see.
All right. Well, we got ribs up here. We've got the souffle. I mean, there's so many different yummy options. Who gets to eat it when you're done? Is your crew, does everybody want to be a part of that?
The crew for the first ride was basically just Laura and myself. But I have to say that one of the best parts about shooting the shows, was that when they were over, we got to eat the food.
You know, right.
We made spicy brisket, and, you know, when episode we made chili with chocolate and dark beer. We were plotting out the next episode we're going to shoot next week with Happy, the new producer. And we were plotting out, you know, when we're going to do, you know, each part of the recipe and filming. And I said, well, we need to start with the end of the recipe, because what I'm going to be making next week is something that takes a few hours in the stove.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, great. So we'll shoot the end shot. Then we'll take a break and we'll eat. and then we'll shoot the rest of it. It's like, oh, okay. It's because this particular recipe that's coming up, making a slow roasted pork shoulder with a dry chili, Mexican beer, tomato, onion.
It's so good.
Sauce.
Getting hungry just hearing about it.
It takes 4 hours. So, you know, I'm going to make two of them.
Right.
We're going to shoot the end first, and then we'll shoot the beginning, and, you know, that's that.
Wow. The Italian style ribs looks pretty good too. I'm watching that with the sound off here. That looks good. So,
nice way to make ribs where you don't barbecue them.
Were you a chef or a cook in a different lifetime before music, or is this just a hobby?
It really is just a hobby. I kind of taught myself. I learned pretty early in my 20s that one of the easier ways to woo a woman, that's a good way of putting it, was to cook for them.
Mm-hmm. It worked on me.
So that was it. I think there's some similarities. You know, when you're recording a song, there's all these different pieces to the puzzle, and it has to all come together as one at the end. The same thing if you're making a meal for people coming over. You might be cooking, you know, three or four or five different things with different, you know, timing, and it has to all come together at the end. It's essentially sort of to mix the meal, just like you're mixing a song. And it has, for me, some other similarities. One of the great things about music and writing songs or playing in the studio, that for me, I would just leave everything else at the door. Like, I didn't think about work, my day gig, nothing. When I was in the studio, and that was it. It's the same thing with cooking, Matt.
Right.
For the hour or two that I'm cooking, I'm not thinking about anything else.
That's a good thing. Well, that music means, kind of like the Academy Awards, that we are officially out of time, and Jose's letting me know. So we got to say goodbye, and we're going to leave with a little piece of Everywhere I Go, because we have to go. We've been listening to Three Pair of Boots, and go to threepairsofboots.com for all the information and some great links to the music and the cooking show. Thank you guys for joining me.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Andrew Stern and Laura Arias, my guests. Three pairs of boots. Let's take it out. Stay safe.
It's time to be bold, to head for the horizon. So I swapped out my rocking chair for my Norwegian fjord.